bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't gamble. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into a busy Bet the Board Week 7 Monday Night Football Edition podcast powered by Bet Online. Be joined in just a second by Payne Insider. Hopefully folks were able to take full advantage of not only our indication of where we thought the money was going on Thursday night between San Francisco and Seattle, but a pretty good weekend overall for a lot of our leans. Payne, a small golf clap for you out here in the desert.
Yeah, back-to-back good weeks. Don't think we have had a loss the last 2 weeks in the NFL, personally speaking. So our baby is back, so to speak.
After a pretty lethargic start to the season, momentum has definitely reached a full force and the train officially on the tracks. If you're not following Payne on Twitter, you're missing out on some great information. You can find him at Payne Insider. You can find me at Todd Furman. And, of course, subscribe to the Bet the Board podcast if you haven't already done so. iTunes, SoundCloud, or visit us at toddstake.com. And, Payne, as we always like to do when it comes to playing Monday morning quarterback, we may as well start with a glass half full and go with impressive performances. I'm not going to let you go with the Dolphins right out of the gate, though. You're going to have to use that as number two.
I think you have to look at Kirk Cousins, largest comeback win in Redskins history. I know a lot of guys are not high on Kirk Cousins in general. I think we know what he is, but if I told you he set a Redskins franchise record with most completions for a game, I think that would shock most people. Huge swing game. You obviously go into the break 3-4 instead of 2-5. You're alive in the NFC East. You get 2 weeks rest, and that means likely DeSean Jackson back. Chris Culliver, the prized possession you obtained in the offseason at cornerback, he looks like he will be back. Huge win for the Redskins.
All right, I don't want to be negative in all of it because Kirk Cousins definitely was a key cog in leading the comeback for the Skins, who faced a 24-0 deficit. But how much of that do we attribute to the Buccaneers' ineffectiveness and basically an overall inability to get off the field when they needed to at key junctures throughout the course of that football game?
Yeah, I mean, no doubt about it. It hurt losing Vincent Jackson throughout that game. You had two huge drives in the second half where you could have just stomped on the Redskins' throats and you ended up settling for field goals. There's no doubt about that. But we know what the Bucs are. Lovie Smith isn't very good. We've talked about this ad nauseum throughout this podcast this entire season. His defense, the cover two, is outdated. When you look at what the Redskins are without DeSean Jackson, they're a dink-and-dunk team. There's no deep threat. Everything is over the middle, and that's where Lovie Smith allowed them to operate, staying in the cover two. The 10- to 12-yard pass over the middle of the field was open there in that comeback effort. So a lot of it definitely lies on Lovie Smith and his defense.
Yeah, I think Tampa Bay defensively a little bit disappointing. You mentioned the injury to Vincent Jackson. It was nice to see Mike Evans finally get into the end zone, had his biggest game of the season. And, of course, Doug Martin, as we talked about before the year, clearly a player to watch in a contract season, put together a solid effort on the ground. Payne, a team that really impressed me, and I know I guess it probably shouldn't be that impressive because we loved him as a four-point underdog as they headed down the coast to take on the Chargers. The Oakland Raiders hanging 37 points on San Diego defensively. Derek Carr to Amari Cooper. Continuing to merge, not quite elite just yet, but definitely going to be a tandem of quarterback wide receiver that we're going to become, you know, big fans of in the National Football League in years to come.
One part of that tandem is elite right now, and that's Amari Cooper. This was the dead nuts lock draft pick. The Raiders didn't screw it up. Everything you want out of a wide receiver, he has. He can run after catch. He's got great hands. He's cerebral, runs great routes. He's got the top end speed. Everything you wanted in Amari Cooper, you got. Great first round pick. You didn't screw it up this year. Oakland. So good team moving forward. Got a little bit of a ground game with Murray going as well. Certainly takes some things off of Derek Carr's plate. we'll see what Carr can become. If he gets rid of that gunslinger mentality and becomes a little more efficient, I think this team can go in the right direction. Del Rio, still not sold on him, but he'd had his troops prepared out of the bye week. So this Raiders team, definitely someone to be reckoned with. I think they're going to be pretty decent against the spread. I know we'll get to them later in the segment. Already catching money, looking at week 8 lines already.
Yeah, definitely a different dynamic for a game between Oakland and the Jets than it would have taken on had it been played this previous week. One thing, though, I want to give Oakland credit. I definitely do for their performance, but still, the one issue that plagues the Raiders is penalties. 14 penalties, 136 yards. You're not going to win a ton of football games at this level. Thankfully, the Chargers didn't exactly show up in building a 30-6 lead. You were able to disguise some of that hidden yardage that could potentially play an impact. All right, Payne, another team that impressed you, and I'm going to let you go right in your backyard if you so choose.
Franchise record, 41 first half points. The Dolphins were amazing, honestly. Tannehill, perfect passer rating, completed his first 18 passes of the game. And if you combine that with how he finished the Titans game in week 6, Ryan Tannehill sets an NFL record with 25 consecutive pass completions. One thing that you really see, though, is just life. When you look at some of the plays that are happening, they're able to establish the ground game, but look at the big guys. They get downfield. They're ready to go to the second level. The Jarvis Landry touchdown, fantastic run by Jarvis Landry, but you have two linemen in Pouncey and James that are 50 yards down the field still blocking. So it's that effort, that energy that Dan Campbell's instilled in them, and I guess the motto is right now, never quit, whatever that means, but you can kind of see that permeating throughout the locker room. They're having fun and they're playing hard.
Yeah, we've definitely seen a lot more energy from the Dolphins each of the last 2 weeks. Now it'll be a question of energy is enough when they go on the road for what suddenly become a fascinating football game against the New England Patriots on a short week. And, of course, we've seen the market adjust accordingly. We'll get to that in a matter of a few short minutes. And I'm going to go devil's advocate. I'm going to just go to huge disappointment on the other side, the Houston Texans. Again, they surrender an ungodly amount of points in the first half. This team has faced some of the largest deficits of any team in the National Football League. We saw them down 42-0 at one point against Atlanta, tackling non-existent, and clearly a team headed in the wrong direction. Now, from a fantasy perspective, hopefully people have Brian Hoyer, DeAndre Hopkins, and a couple of their weapons, because they've done nothing but picked up chunks of yardage and fantasy points in garbage time when they're facing these monstrous holes they need to dig out of.
Romeo Crennel, my friend. Sometimes when you have multiple kids, one ends up with some bad sperm. And that seems to be Romeo Crennel. He's fallen off the Belichick tree, not doing too well. He's probably a better taste tester at this point. Just not a very good coach. We need to just put him out to the pasture. That's partly the problem. This Texans defense just underachieving. When you look at some of the pieces they have on defense, this should be a top-notch defense, and they're just not. Offensively, we can, you know, beat a dead horse. They don't have a quarterback. That's the reality of the situation. Tough loss with Arian Foster. I mean, that's kind of just the bow tie on that game. Just tough to see him go down. So there's not going to be much from them moving forward, although, you know, probably have some value, unfortunately, for guys like us moving forward.
Yeah, I think that the luster has officially worn off the Houston Texans for the general public, and as you mentioned, it's all about numbers and being able to steal a couple points here and there. So have a feeling we'll find ourselves on the Texans relatively often from here on out on the Bet the Board podcast. And, Payne, I'm going to go with a negative performance for a guy that we thought could really fill in admirably. We didn't think he was that much of a drop-off from their starting quarterback, and that's Zach Mettenberger. You and I traded notes throughout the game, and I think you hit the nail on the head coming up with a perfect analogy, calling Zach Mettenberger a slightly better version of Ryan Mallett, a quarterback who lacked, I don't want to say pocket presence, but touch on a lot of his deep balls. And I think this was a chance for him to go out there, really show that he deserved consideration for starting quarterback on another roster if the Tennessee Titans chose to move him, but really failed to impress me. And I think my initial statement that I thought there was only about a one-point drop-off from him, from Marcus to him, clearly I'm going to have to reassess my power numbers as it pertains to those two individuals.
Yeah, just not a lot of touch on the ball, not overly cerebral. throws huge picks to end each half. The one at halftime was just very bad. I know there was some pressure on him, but it's an easy slide right in the pocket, so he doesn't have a ton of pocket presence. To start the game, he misses Kendall Wright on a third down on a 20-yard crossing route that likely could have gone to the house. He does lose some confidence with the Justin Hunter drop on a first down play action, but just overall slow to read and react, throws questionable tight fit passes in there. But I will say this, and a lot of people have mentioned it that are in the know. For whatever reason, Ken Wisenhunt has a completely different game plan with Mariota and Mettenberger. Now, I get the distinction between one being mobile and one not, but if you watch a lot of the passes that he allows Mariota to throw, they're quick, they're over the middle, they're two of his big targets. It just doesn't seem like anything Wisenhunt prepares for Mettenberger is an easy throw. And that's kind of concerning when it comes to Ken Wisenhunt. And God forbid, if he played in a city and coached in a city that really cared about football, he would have been gone a long time ago.
I think it was interesting watching that game. You could see Mett trying to stretch the field, as you mentioned early on, and he wasn't helped at all. There was a drop from Kendall Wright. There was a huge drop from Justin Hunter, kind of standing alone. And it almost appeared like it impacted his confidence moving forward, and he tries to be too perfect and too precise. Whereas if he's able to connect on a couple big plays, Tennessee all of a sudden is rolling downhill. And by that same token, the Tennessee Titans defense was outstanding, and clearly a unit that doesn't get enough credit. They showed tenacity and a level of energy and attention to detail that we haven't seen from them all that often. And even the run defense, which has been much maligned, did a good job of at least bottling up Devontae Freeman for stretches, not for the entire game.
Yeah, Dick Blabeau, we've talked about him coming in and having a great impact on this defense. They play physically. They get a little bit after the quarterback. They went and acquired Parrish Cox, who's one of the elite cover corners in this league. So they're doing the things that you need to do defensively if they can get a few points. We knew it was going to be a down spot for Atlanta, and it was. Unfortunately, Mettenberger and the offense couldn't take advantage of that, and the cover became much tougher than it needed to be. Definitely caught some breaks late in that game if you were on Tennessee with the big interception at the end, the missed field goal as well. But this was a spot that if the offense was able to get a few points early, they would have been able to hold on. I think if Mariota's in there, they likely win that game by double digits.
Well, I mean, maybe it allows us to continue to get value fading the Falcons, something we've done early and often throughout the course of the 2015 season on the Bet the Board podcast. Payne, another team that either impressed you or disappointed you over the weekend?
It's tough to say. I think you probably are a little impressed with the Minnesota Vikings. That was a spot that I know a lot of people out there thought was an easy spot to take. That was far from the case. A lot of professional bettors were on the Lions. They took the 2.5. They ended up closing a small favorite at a lot of the sharp shops. Minnesota gets punched in the mouth early, but they fight back. They get the ground game going. Stephon Diggs looks like a viable offensive weapon for Teddy Bridgewater. They seem to be connecting perfectly together, and he hasn't had that rapport with Mike Wallace. So that's a huge addition. Big question mark is, can Diggs stay healthy? It's a reason why his stock dropped in the draft. Clearly a first-round talent. So that'll be interesting to see moving forward. But I was very, very impressed with the Minnesota Vikings. Again, we talk about this a lot with impressed and unimpressed efforts. If you're going to do it in a spot where professionals are fading you, I find it more impressive. And that was the case, especially when you get down big in that game early on.
I think that's an interesting point, and a lot of our listeners may not quite understand that, because we have a pretty good knack for anticipating where teams are going to play their best games, where teams may tend to falter. Oakland, San Diego, a prime example. We didn't expect the Chargers to be great. We thought Oakland coming out of the bye was going to be outstanding. The major media surprised by it. They're going to talk about how this team has finally come of age, whereas we go, no, that's kind of what we thought was going to happen. Whereas the Vikings-Lions game, a lot of the media thinks the Vikings are supposed to go in there and roll. We see the game very differently. And the Vikings do live up to that expectation. Talk about their offense finding a way. A team who I think I'm officially off the bandwagon, Payne. It took me 7 weeks or whatever the hell we're in. Yeah, week seven. I think I'm officially off the Philadelphia Eagles bandwagon after watching that offense continue to lack an identity yet again. all of a sudden that 27-point quote-unquote outburst against the Giants on Monday night doesn't look quite so great after you watch a Giants struggle to do anything well against the Cowboys. Sam Bradford averages 4.5 yards per attempt. Not entirely on him. There were plenty of drops, including Miles Austin should have made the catch to extend Philadelphia's chance to score late. They lose Jason Peters. We're not sure for how long. I have to imagine at least 6 to 8 weeks, if not for the entire season. But for me, I am officially off the Philadelphia Eagles bandwagon as a viable threat in the National Football Conference.
Yeah, and it's not to, you know, make a hot take or create one, but the question mark is definitely there on Sam Bradford. Do you make the change to Sanchez? I think it's a viable question at this point. You look at Sam Bradford. He just looks rattled out there. And I didn't watch a lot of St. Louis football for health reasons, but everyone told me that this guy...
Wait a second. I don't think anybody did, including Rams fans. That's why the team's thinking about relocating.
Yeah. I was told in all the games that I watched was Sam Bradford has pinpoint accuracy. That's the one thing that he has. And I talked about it last week. The Giants had no pass rush whatsoever. And he wasn't accurate. He threw three interceptions, had all day in the pocket. So there's just some underlying confidence issues there. I'm still not sure he's 100% healthy. He's unwilling to step into the throws even when he has all day. So he's certainly not going to step into them when there is pressure on him. Again, a ton of drops. This is a Chip Kelly offense that needs that option where a quarterback can move a little bit. Sanchez, clearly, no one's going to mistake him for Vic in his prime, but he can move a little bit. He can move around in the pocket a little bit. He is accurate. And when you talk about this Philadelphia defense, came into the game top three in defensive efficiency. We've seen Mark Sanchez lead his teams to the playoffs and make a run when he has a defense to support him. So I think Chip Kelly's going to have some tough decisions to make here moving forward. At some point, you have to think about it.
By the way, guys, I don't know if you caught this, but in the least surprising news ever, Jeff Fisher is coaching another 500 team.
Yeah. Well, you know what? The Rams were a team that the Sharp guys were on this week, and I think St. Louis moving forward definitely bears watching if Nick Foles can get any continuity. We've seen Todd Gurley emerge. Didn't quite crack my list of impressive performances, but clearly a guy that's given them a weapon in the ground game that they so desperately lacked. Payne, disappointing efforts for me. I think I'm going to have to throw this entire team under the bus just by the way the game went. What the hell kind of performance was that from the Indianapolis Colts? Less than 22 minutes time of possession, they found themselves in a 27-0 hole against the New Orleans Saints, unable to do anything moving the football. I really don't know what this team has become, and you don't know who to blame it. I mean, is it Chuck Pagano? Is it Andrew Luck? I mean, where does responsibility start to fall for Indianapolis? Now as they sit there at 3-4, still the favorites to win their division, but clearly a team who's one and done at best when we're talking about the AFC playoff picture.
Still in first place somehow. They did lose their Super Bowl last week. That was the game they got up for. That was the game they needed. And, you know, they fell short. They had a brain fart. When you lose games with decision-making by your head coach, you know, the locker room becomes a little disgruntled. And I think there's another little underlying factor, and that's Andrew Luck's health. He does not even look close to 100%. We're going to be doing some digging around there this week. So I think that is definitely room for some concern if you're an Indianapolis Colts fan. So I think it's kind of a compiling of a lot of issues, head coach, turmoil in the locker room, and then obviously Andrew Luck's health.
I want to give the Carolina Panthers defense a ton of credit for their performance. Should have probably hit on that when we were rapping on Sam Bradford and some of the Eagles' struggles. But Payne, before we close the book on most of the Week 7 slate as far as impressive teams and teams that disappointed us, anybody else that you wanted included on either list?
Yeah, you know, I kind of semi-disagree a little bit there with the Carolina's defensive performance. I think Bradford wasn't very good. Ton of drops. They were actually able to run the ball a little bit. For me, they just don't have a ton of weapons. They really don't. When you look at this team, who is your go-to guy for Sam Bradford? You know, that's the other issue. There is no horse. There is no guy that you're going to say can beat his man consistently off the line of scrimmage, off press man coverage, and get open for Sam Bradford. This system is totally predicated on the system. That's it. But this is what Chip Kelly thought, you know, kind of made his offense in this regard. But it looks like they are able to run the ball a little bit better. But again, wasn't completely impressed by the Carolina defense. They left some, they let up some big plays there, and a lot of brain farts, more so on the Philadelphia Eagles offense than for praising the Carolina defense for me.
We will get to see Carolina again on national TV on Monday night when they play host to the Indianapolis Colts, team that bears watching as we continue to move forward. The man on the other end of the line, that voice of reason on this Bet the Board podcast, the one, the only, at Payne Insider. You can follow him on Twitter, at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me on Twitter, at Todd Furman. And if you still need a reason to subscribe to the podcast, head over to SoundCloud, iTunes, or visit us at toddstake.com. Payne, look-ahead lines. We've clearly seen the market overreact, underreact. I'm not quite sure how we want to put it, given the results of Week 7 thus far. And may as well start with the Thursday night game when New England plays host to the Miami Dolphins. Look-ahead number from the Westgate Superbook, 10.5. And right now, the current price on this one has adjusted a full field goal at BetOnline. You're looking at New England, a 7.5-point favorite total in this game, 51.
Yeah, probably would have liked double digits here. This will be an interesting test for Dan Campbell. Short week, new role obviously as a head coach. Let's see if he can come up with a game plan on a short week. We know Tom Sula wasn't able to do that on Thursday night. And then you have to go against Brady and Belichick on a short week. That's never a good sign. So it'll be interesting to see if he can keep the momentum of the Miami Dolphins moving forward. Tough matchup. When you look at what the Dolphins are in the middle of the field, have trouble covering, running backs and tight ends. So will be an interesting matchup there.
And this game, of course, will be a focal point for our weekly Thursday night podcast, where we try and give you all the most compelling betting angles to start the weekend off right. Chiefs Lions, they'll head out across the pond. You're looking at Kansas City now, a 4-point favorite at BetOnline. Game before last weekend, you were looking at Kansas City minus 2.5. I'm not sure I'm ready to buy into KC in their performance against the Steelers and Landry Jones making his debut start in the National Football League, but clearly the market has felt a need to react and respond to what occurred on Sunday.
This is going to probably be some pretty bad football to watch. Detroit's made the trip over there before, so they're going to be acclimated to that. Do they treat it as a vacation? That's the only question. Market moving up a little bit will be interesting to see where this line goes. When nobody wants a team, probably the time to back them. We'll see how high this line gets.
Wanted to get your thoughts, too, Payne, before we move down to other games. Any takeaways from what we saw in London between the Jaguars and Bills yesterday?
Not really. Other than Rex Ryan being overrated. You know, tough spot there. Get out to an early lead. EJ Manuel, you know, he is what he is. Didn't really love the initial game plan there. You got to get EJ Manuel moving around the pocket, get him some confident throws early on that game, get him with some read option, get his legs going. So from a game perspective, Rex Ryan, I think, failed miserably there.
Saints-Giants, current line on this game, open 3.5 as the Saints will play host to the Giants. We've already seen some money come in early on the Giants, pushing that back to a juice 3 at some spots. Did look-ahead number here was 2.5, so we're talking about movement through a key number. Any major feeling one way or another in terms of why the market may have responded in such a way with these two football teams?
You know, the Giants have looked miserable the last 2 weeks. I know, you know, they got the W on Sunday, but they have not played well the last 2 weeks. Clearly, this is kind of a roll the Giants feasted on the road, underdog. I would expect to see some money come in on them. The Saints, they've played well the last few weeks. You have to give them credit. They haven't quit. Two big wins, one coming on the road. Still a clear home field advantage there. Very tough place to play. But I would not be looking to back the Saints in this spot.
I definitely would agree. I think you may be paying a premium right now, and that's probably what the market is also indicating. Payne, one of the bigger moves that we saw, given the Week 7 results, Jets looked like they were going to be a 3-point road favorite on the road at Oakland. That number all the way down to a pick'em when the betting markets opened up. The Jets off a heartbreaking loss, albeit a cover against New England. Oakland, can they handle prosperity? Big win against San Diego coming home to play host to the New York Jets.
And I'm sure we'll hear all about that cover on Thursday when we get Dave Mason's thoughts. Nick Falk bangs home a big one for the players and not so much the house. We have seen a drastic movement here. This one will be interesting to monitor. I'm not convinced that the initial move is 100% real. I will have to dig into this one a little more. Obviously, first thing Monday morning, long ways to go, a lot of information to obtain on this one. But to me, I don't think this move that drastically was warranted.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's important to note, too, for a lot of the folks listening, trying to digest what they've seen over the weekend. You never want to come to snap conclusions. You always want to make sure that you've found the injuries, seen the aftermath, read the players' comments, quotes, to gauge exactly where these two teams are at after somewhat disparate results, at least to the outside observer. And Payne, of course, the other game, the Monday nighter, Panthers-Colts, you mentioned Andrew Luck, clearly not operating 100%. We've seen the market change substantially here. The Colts look to be 3.5-point dogs in the look-ahead number. Carolina now a 6.5-point favorite. We keep waiting for this Panthers team to let down. I'm not sure on Monday night that's the case, but is this move warranted given what we saw from the Colts?
Depending on the injury status of, you know, what I find out throughout the next few days, we will find out. Certainly, if Luck is a go and he is healthy enough, Indianapolis definitely makes an intriguing play, especially if you can get a 7 in the market.
And, of course, again, that game we won't even cover on Thursday. You're going to have to wait a full week to get our thoughts on Panthers-Colts. Obviously, a lot can change between now and 7 days. And, Payne, I know you gave me all sorts of shit last week because I didn't do my job, and I have one job to do as host of this Bet the Board podcast. I neglected the movie preview we had slated on Tom Hanks in Bridge of Spies. I know a lot of people are giving it, you know, huge praise, you know, calling it, I don't know, I won't say Academy Award-winning performance, but saying this is one of Hanks's better roles. But wanted to get your thoughts on Bridge of Spies as people approach November. And, you know, we're getting closer to the holiday season. Folks need some flicks to try and keep on their radar.
Well, I'm happy that you actually did the homework. You just failed to turn it in. So,
you know, that's the whole thing. I left it at home, and my mom wasn't able to drop off my paper at the school. So I had to, you know, give up a half a letter grade or whatever it was back in the day that we subjected ourselves to when we didn't do things in a timely manner.
At least you didn't throw up the excuse of the dog ate your homework. So we will let that slide. Bridge of Spies, very good movie. Thought Tom Hanks was awesome per usual. But I did. I liked Mark Rylance. He played Rudolf Abel, the Russian spy. I thought he was excellent. Not to spoil too much, you always love a Entourage sighting, and the Dominator showed face there. So that was always pretty cool. Overall, I think it was one of the better movies I've seen this year. 8 out of 10 for me, definitely worth the money and definitely worth the time to go see.
Wow, 8 out of 10. I won't quite go that far. I think the title of the movie, you know, probably not the best choice. There was a reference they used throughout the film. I won't share it now for folks to kind of, much like you said, Payne, avoid playing spoiler. But I think they could have changed the title of the movie. There were, you know, a handful of plot gaps that I think could have been filled in. And given what we've seen from Tom Hanks before, it was no Forrest Gump. It was no Saving Private Ryan, Castaway, or The Green Mile. So 8 out of 10, you know, that's, you're heaping strong praise on Mr. Hanks for what he was able to produce.
Yeah, I thought it was a good movie. I liked it. You're a little tougher critic. I value entertainment. I value being able to get my mind away from sports betting for 2 hours, and it did just that. You're the tough critic. You're the tough guy here.
I mean, I'm the analytical guy when a lot of this stuff boils down. I'm trying to figure out angles, figure, you know, make sense of exactly what I've seen. I definitely would agree with you. I think it is a worthwhile watch. Entertainment value was there. I'm just not sure I would give it an 8 out of 10. I think we're going to see a trend over, you know, 17 weeks or how many ever weeks we offer movie previews. It's going to be tough to try and get me to give you an 8 out of 10 for any particular flick we're discussing.
Yeah, clearly you're the Russian judge in the figure skating contest. You're the tough one. there's no doubt about that.
That implies corruption and pain. That actually hurts my feelings. I try and do everything on the up and up in this business, but if you're going to take shots, I'm going to have to defend myself. And I guess, well, a team that's taken shots all season long and hasn't come up smelling like roses in our Monday Night Football game, Arizona plays host to the Baltimore Ravens. We talked about this game being a great teaser piece had you wanted to tie it into something earlier in the week. Arizona right now, an 8.5-point favorite at BetOnline. Total in this game sits at 49. I don't really see a whole lot here. From a handicapping perspective, you're looking for a straight wager, Payne, but kind of wanted to get your thoughts on two teams who enter this game with very different Monday Night Football records. The Ravens 7-2 straight up the last nine. Of course, they've been favored in a number of those. And Arizona, a bit of a stranger to Monday Night Football success, 2-10 straight up the last 12 times that they've played on the first day of the week.
Yeah, I'll continue being the buzzkill. There's not much here for me on this game. I do have Arizona minus 1.5 as the second leg of a two-team teaser to close it out. If this line got to 10, I'd consider taking back a third of my teaser position on the dog. But if I'm breaking the game down just a little bit, the numbers, to me, certainly lie to my eyes. Arizona is apparently number one overall in efficiency in the NFL. So my eyes don't tell me that. Baltimore, 1-5, not as bad statistically as the record indicates, number 13 overall in team efficiency. And here's a funny note when you actually look at this. We have the 1-5 Ravens as being a touch more efficient than the 6-1 Atlanta Falcons. So very interesting note there. Ravens really have one bad loss on the resume. You know, they faced Denver, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, all top-rated teams. Raiders are better than we thought coming into the year. Cleveland, they blew the game, a touch more competent than we thought they'd be. San Francisco was the bad loss last week for the Ravens.
And four games out west in 7 weeks for Baltimore. We're not sure about their status as far as skill position players are concerned. Do we think Steve Smith's going to try and be able to give it a go tonight to at least give Joe Flacco a weapon he can trust a little bit more than Kamar Aiken as his go-to guy?
Yeah, you know, we'll see. He's a gamer. Clearly gave it a go last week. They're going to need that offensive line to be impactful. They're going to need to be able to establish a ground game, and that's going to be the key here. We have seen significant professional money on the Ravens at a certain price point. They did take some double digits here, and we have seen professionals willing to lay the Arizona Cardinals on a teaser line. When you look early in that week, Pinnacle basically giving a teaser protection line, rarity for them to do that. So we've seen action on both sides as it pertains to sharp money in those two roles, Arizona on the teaser line, Ravens at double digits. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes from here. We did see a little bit of dummy money on the total, getting it down as low as 47.5 to get it ripped back up. We were looking at 49 across the board. So that will be interesting to see moving forward where that total goes. But for me, not a ton on this game.
Yeah, I mean, I would have similar sentiments. I think one of the harder games to handicap. Did want to get your thoughts on the total, so I'm glad you hit on that, talking about some of the movement. And I know people have called us the, I won't say unofficial, the official podcast of the first half under. That clearly won't be a direction that interests us in this football game. And you mentioned some of these teams head in different directions. Baltimore at 1-5 may not have a ton to play for, so they have to relish these opportunities to rise to the occasion. Just a very difficult traveling quirk.
Yeah, and they did head back home this week. So we've seen earlier in the year when they faced the Raiders, they stayed on the West Coast. This week, chose to go back home. Read into that what you may. Maybe it didn't result how they thought it would against the Raiders, or maybe at 1-5, they said, hey, we are what we are at this point. We're going to head back home, maybe kind of just hang out there and move forward with the season. So it'll be tough to see how this game plays out.
You know, we are in this pain. We are a podcast that picks winners and tries to hand out gambling gold each and every week to our loyal listeners. So before we bid everyone farewell, any final sentiments as we give our listeners, you know, 48 to 72 hours to digest a lot of our nonsense before we reconvene on Thursday?
No, nothing too crazy. Go see the Bridge of Spies on Tuesday or Wednesday when there's not much on the board for betting. Get away a little bit. That's my biggest piece of advice. Get away. Almost week 8.
We're thinking next Monday, The Martian probably going to be our movie preview.
You tell me, kind sir.
Well, I do have some family engagements coming up this week, but I can't neglect my homework. So,
your sister's probably going to get married, what, 2, 3, 4 times? You can probably catch her on the next one. Go see The Martian.
hopefully not the case, but we'll definitely try and capture The Martian as our movie preview for folks that want to see it, maybe ahead of time, and tell Payne and I if we're nuts, if we're correct, incorrect. in the meantime. But for all of our loyal listeners, thank you for tuning in. Remember, follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. You can follow me at Todd Furman. And you can subscribe to the Bet the Board podcast, SoundCloud, iTunes, or visit us at toddstake.com. Best of luck on Monday Night Football when the Ravens take on the Arizona Cardinals. And hopefully we'll have a chance to see you at the window. We'll